Today's show is sponsored in part by TeamViewer. In the age of remote work, how can distributed workforces keep their IT systems running smoothly while ensuring stability and security? TeamViewer remote management allows organizations of all sizes to monitor business-critical aspects of their IT, centralize important device information without relying on end-user input, detect and patch software vulnerabilities, and protect devices against external threats and human error. Learn more about TeamViewer remote management at teamviewer.com/IPv6.
Welcome to the IPv6 Buzz podcast, where we dare to dive into the 128-bit address space wormhole. I'm Ed Horley with my co-host, Scott Hoag. Tom Coffeen is out today, and we're going to be talking all about DNS Flag Day with our guest, Andrew Workin from Blue Cat Networks. And we just sort of wanted to also let the audience know we've got sponsorship available for the show, so if you're interested, just go to packetpushers.net/sponsorship. You can get all the details. And with that, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thrilled to be here.
So let's jump in and let's start talking about it. Number one is maybe you can give us a little bit of an overview of like what the heck DNS Flag Day is all about. What, you know, why did it come about? Maybe some of the motivations. You know, what was the community, because this is a community thing, what was the community really trying to achieve with DNS Flag Day?
Sure. And October 1st was the second Flag Day, and there'll be other Flag Days on top of it. And it's all around there's quite a cost that's been implemented in DNS infrastructure to keep compliance, basically driving workarounds for non-compliant older DNS software that might be out there. And so, you know, there's most of the major DNS software vendors implemented workarounds in order to, you know, for instance, if a server isn't protocol compliant, then try again in a way that it might be compliant. And so there was a motivation to remove those workarounds, drive the cost back to the non-compliant servers. Like they're the ones that should suffer, as opposed to everybody in the middle that's implementing all of these workarounds, so that you can keep moving DNS further forward, because, you know, all of these workarounds were creating stalling progress in some cases. And so the community came together, DNS OARC, a bunch of the DNS software vendors, some service providers, and started driving a very open process to prioritize a series of things they can do to sort of clean this up. And again, you know, drive that cost back to those that are maintaining non-compliant servers, which you know, in some cases was non-compliant servers, some cases was firewalls or load balancers, but regardless. And so that first Flag Day event was very focused on the extensions mechanism to DNS or eDNS, which was implemented many years ago, but many servers weren't compliant. And by the way, you know, for a server to be compliant, if it doesn't need to necessarily understand all of eDNS, it just needs to follow the RFC and reply accordingly. But if it wasn't replying or serve failing, then now whatever is querying that DNS server needs to try again without eDNS, as an example. And so the first Flag Day from 2019 was focused on stopping the workarounds for servers that don't correctly handle the extensions to DNS.
Yeah, so it's basically what the community was trying to do was address technical debt, right? We had this whole backlog of technical debt of people not updating and keeping current, and it's building up, and it's basically what it is sort of think of it this way, it's a giant anchor around the steamship of the internet moving forward, right?
And it's right, because the technical debt, the cost of the technical debt was incurred by those that were trying to keep a working internet. So they had to implement these workarounds, which was additional work, because the people that should have been dealing with their technical debt were remaining stagnant.
Yeah, and this is a common, I think, a common theme for many of the core fundamental services on the internet today, right? I mean, this is not unique to DNS, but DNS has a very important role within the internet. There's basically two things that are sort of fundamental about making the internet work. One is a protocol, right? Like IPv4 and IPv6, and the other is we need a name service to make this stuff work. And so without those two, pretty much everything else is you know, it's turtles the whole way down. You can't make any of the other stuff work without those fundamental things.
Yeah, and you need BGP, and you need people to mind their manners and follow those best practices as well, right?
No, right, just a giant static routing table. We don't need, need BGP.
It's a big Etsy host of everything in the internet. I mean, we've done this, we've had to deal with this very early on with IPv6, where we had common misbehavior against DNS queries. Early on, there were DNS resolvers that didn't know what a quad A record was and kind of balked when they received one and then answered the host back either NX domain or no answer. So we had to adjust and we'll create RFC 4074 and make DNS resolvers or clients rather ask for two separate queries, an A record query and a quad A record query separately in case one failed. They could still get to the other protocol.
Yeah, as an example, and if you look at the I shouldn't say roadmap, but so there's a GitHub site and I think we'll add the link, but where the community sort of collects issues for future consideration, and one is certainly around quad A records and still issues around that. But yeah, it's a perfect example of a workaround. So now I need to send two queries, you know, in the case that I'm not speaking to a protocol compliant server.
Yeah, we double your workload, technical debt.
Right. Yeah. But this DNS flag day had to do a lot with fragmentation, organizations that were fragmenting those DNS responses, and that caused, could you tell us a little more about how fragmentation impacted things?
Yeah, for sure. So with eDNS, you've got DNS messages that are going to exceed 512 bytes and therefore, with UDP, you're going to get fragmentation. And also with that fragmentation, then you have potential security issues, you have potential performance issues, you have potential, you know, there's specific issues with fragmentation around IPv6 as well that are also related to potentially firewalls with, you know, specialized ICMP messages. And so this fragmentation isn't good. And so the second flag day is really focused on one, setting a global or maximum of a UDP message size or MTU. And that really should be, I think they're going to set it to 1220 or something, but whatever, a few bytes short of like the minimum IPv6. Mm-hmm. And anything above that should be TCP. And so there are specific configurations for resolver, something asking an authoritative server for an answer, and certain configurations for an authoritative answer. And or the authoritative server, and then you got to be able to support TCP if we're going to exceed that maximum, you know, value. And there's a lot of DNS servers out there that may not, and not necessarily because the DNS server itself doesn't support TCP, but there's lots of firewalls and load balancers and other things that are configured on the you know, on eDNS. You know, initially, larger DNS packet size means that it's a more viable protocol for any sort of denial of service or DDoS attack. So, you know, there were very naive attempts to say, well, then we'll strip that or limit it, or if it's greater than 512 bytes, block it, you know? And so, so there's all sorts of potential compliance issues that aren't necessarily the DNS server, but in this case, yeah, you gotta be able to support TCP, and you should set your, you know, sort of UDP MTU to, I think it's going to be 1220, but whatever, something.
Yeah, 1232 bytes. Yeah, right, because, and you know, when you query a DNS zone, you're doing a lookup, and you could get back a lot of extra auxiliary data, extra glue records, extra DNSSEC keys and other things that make the response bigger. And we talked about this a bit on IPv6 Buzz show 55. This is the bad and the ugly of that show we talked about with Jeff Houston, where he talked about these issues that delay and make, just slows down DNS, which then slows down every other subsequent connection that relies upon DNS.
Right. And you know, the way the message is fragmented, the way it's fragmented makes it possible to spoof the second, third, fourth, fifth fragment as well. And so there's potential issues along that line too. But yeah, no, DNSSEC is certainly an example where you're going to have larger messages. Mm-hmm. And you know, therefore you need to be able to consume those appropriately. But you know, it was sort of the irony of DNSSEC or eDNS in general, which is, you know, all of this made DNS a more viable protocol to attack with, because I can now send an 80 byte query. And if I'm launching some sort of DDoS attack, I can send that 80 byte query from many, 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 many nodes. Mm-hmm. I can bounce it off of a DNS server that is with assigned zone. So therefore I can create way more data than 80 bytes in the return message. And since it's UDP, I can potentially spoof the source. Mm-hmm. So basically I can, you know, reflect off and have the response sent to wherever I'm attacking. That's getting a bunch of responses for queries it's never sent, but who cares? It has, still has to deal with them. The packets are still there. It's still filling up the pipes. And so also if I require TCP for these larger messages, then it's less possible to spoof that source.
Yeah, if you're sourcing the query from the victim, it ends up doing a packet amplification attack, and the resulting large volume of amplified responses go back to the victim.
Right.
Yeah. Other, you know, it's tough to do a flag day, right? Everyone on the internet needs to cooperate. That's pretty hard. We've had other, you know, there's people talked about other flag days, like IPv4 flag day. When can we turn off IPv4? You know, that's optimistic. So what are the other challenges with getting everyone to just agree and cooperate?
Well, this was, I applaud the community that drove this, because it was coordination across commercial entities, open source entities, operators. There was a great deal of coordination. There was good communication. There were tools for testing. And, you know, when you look at sort of the results from the first DNS flag day, there was still many non-compliant servers out there. But if you looked at them, many of them were dead servers or servers that hosted domains aren't even being queried anymore. But certainly there was a little bit of fallout, but it was well coordinated, and it wasn't a cliff. You know, it was on that date, it wasn't all of a sudden, you know, all of this non-compliance was stamped out. In some cases, it required new versions of DNS software, server software, that different operators on the internet hadn't upgraded to yet. So the workarounds were still there, you know, so it was still a bit of a slow rollout, and still not everything has been, you know, all those workarounds haven't been removed from everything. So it was intended to be somewhat safe, but also test. You know, it's interesting from a Blue Cap perspective, you know, our customers were fined from is their DNS server compliant? They certainly still need to test, and some had issues with, and some had to actively patch, you know, firewalls and load balancers, either patch or change rules. And those rules were potentially set 15 years ago. You know how it is with any highly configured thing, including DNS, that's been sitting in a data center, a DMZ, for 15 years, like the people who configured this stuff are no longer there. Nobody knows it's even configured. And so test, and there's plenty of tools to test. A lot of my customers were really concerned, though, about not necessarily their own estate. Good example is like our financial customers. For them to execute their business on a daily basis, there's many, many, many other companies and systems they need to talk to whose DNS they don't control. So is there any possibility that they won't be able to process a transaction or a trade because whoever they orchestrate that transaction with has a non-compliant server, and all of a sudden they wouldn't be able to reach it, you know, or resolve a query appropriately? Yeah. How do you de-risk that? How do you how do I figure out what my risk is? And, you know, in this case, we're talking about financial, you know, companies who spend a lot of time thinking about what their risks might be with change. So there was a knock-on impact, which was, okay, I can test my own stuff. I can test a few of my trading partners or supply chain or you know, whatever the case might be. But how do I know? How do I know consumers will still be able to reach my sites? Like there was all of these questions that we went through potential strategies, but there was a lot of concern. And you know, again, just sort of applauding the effort and the way it was done. There was, at least in the companies I work with, very little or if any fallout from the process.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's like, it's not me, it's you.
Right. But that's DNS, right? Well, I guess, you know, IPv4, IPv6, everything else, right? I mean, it requires both sides to be compliant. And and so you've got to hope that the other side is testing, and that's, and hope's usually a bad strategy.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I think one of the nice things about DNS Flag Day is it allows you to stand up and have a microphone like now to sort of make people aware of the fact that this, these sorts of things are going on, that maybe this is something they need to pay attention to, and hopefully you're able to get the word out versus just, you know, arbitrarily the community deciding this needs to cut over, but not having any sort of external communication happening. We just had a DNS Flag Day October 1st, and so, you know, that was just a little bit ago. So maybe the pivot question is, you know, for those of our audience who didn't know that happened, right? What should they be looking out for in terms of behavior that might indicate like, oh, maybe we didn't set our stuff up correctly and I just heard this show and maybe I need to go dig in and figure out what exactly is going on there.
Hey, everybody. We're taking a quick break from the podcast to tell you about our sponsor, TeamViewer. Don't let your IT vulnerabilities go unknown. With TeamViewer remote management, your IT department can stay one step ahead of infrastructure issues. And that includes centralized device monitoring, asset management, proactive patch management, network monitoring, VB100 certified endpoint protection with Windows and macOS support, and of course, GDPR compliant data backup and storage. Plus, you get visibility into important aspects of your IT. That includes disk space, disk health, CPU and memory usage, system updates, firewalls, event logs, and many more. And hey, TeamViewer is offering IPv6 listeners a chance to try remote management free for 14 days. How do you do that? Just head on over to teamviewer.com/IPv6. That's teamviewer.com/IPv6 and get started with IT free of interruptions. And now back to the podcast.
Well, for sure, if they haven't tested, they should test. And most critically, I believe, with the testing is going to be ensuring that their DNS, their authoritative DNS servers are working on TCP and allow for TCP. You know, and furthermore, any of their resolvers that are going out are switching to TCP appropriately. I mean, that's, you know, and it's actually a little crazy, you know, like when I read what would be covered in this, you know, the Flag Day that just occurred on October 1st, it you know, I was trying to think of, okay, so who's not supporting TCP for DNS right now? And you know, it's actually a problem, you know, so, you know, and by the way, you know, when we look like inside the enterprise and in a Blue Cat customer who might be some global enterprise or some, you know, local university or whatever the case might be, you know, usually you see TCP traffic be maybe 5% at best from a DNS standpoint, because the majority of queries, especially inside of a company, they're not going to be signed because it's private DNS. They're going to be less than 512 bytes. They're going to be UDP. It's, you know, TCP happens when there's a problem with UDP and the stub resolver on the client OS switches over to TCP. And so but still, you know, I don't know, frankly, what the percentage and difference is on the internet, but this will drive way more TCP queries than before. And again, reduce the fragmentation. So what customers should be looking for, you know, for sure they should test, for sure they should make sure they should have the availability, you know, to see and understand, you know, the sorts of queries they're getting. And then they should also be looking for errors on queries out to, on, you know, as they resolve other companies' DNS, you know, outbound external DNS queries, you know, to make sure that they're still resolving okay and they're not suffering any issues. I don't expect them, you know, any emergency calls from customers that there's any sort of issue going on. I think, again, this will be a bit of a non-event, and knock on wood. But this actually was interesting because this Flag Day had way less concern than the first Flag Day. And I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, what was changing this time versus last time. But last time, there was just so much fear with global enterprises and what this will mean. And maybe it's because it was executed well last time. Maybe it's because there's just like there was less press that picked it up and less blogs and other stuff about it. So like it's less in people's faces perhaps this time. But this time it was not for the people involved, but from
everyone
enterprise
else.
Standpoint, it seemed to be less of a event.
Yeah, we had the same thing, right? We had World IPv6 Day, and we were all fearful, oh my gosh, how much brokenness is there on the internet? Oh, I guess not as much, you know, because we had made changes, you know, to host OSs, to browsers, right. Happy eyeballs. We had some, we knew it was going to be bad, and so we reacted, we fixed some things. And then there was World IPv6 week, and then there was World IPv6 launch, and they turned out to be kind of non-events, although we were concerned at first.
Right. It's always fun when planning and trying to mitigate risks turns into a non-event. It's
like Y2K.
Yeah, Y2K is a good example of that. But now we've got a couple coming up with the
Unix
clock and everything
Unix
else.
Clock, yeah.
Or the IPv4, you know, routing tables, you know, backbone core routing tables.
65.
In the default free zone, you know, passing 512 bytes. 512 now we're going to get close to a million routes here soon. Yep. So one way, and you mentioned, Andrew, it's really important to test bidirectionally. So one thing I know you can do if, as a listener, you want to check, you can go to dnsflagday.net/2020. And on that site, you can put in your, you know, domain name, and you can say test your domain, and they'll test your domain from the perspective of the internet. And then you can say test your resolver, and that tests from where you're sitting. If you're in the enterprise, then it tests outbound. So to test bidirectionally, besides going to that website, what are other ways people can do to test? Are there things they can generate some synthetic traffic or do some queries and have Wireshark open? What do you think?
You know, for sure. Yeah. Well, dig or drill or any of those can be your friends as well. What's important though is, you know, for the web-based tools are a great place to start. And I think it's a huge part of what the community delivered. The flip side though is, you know, usually you've got a lot of DNS servers and, you know, you're testing, you know, if you're testing the path out, then you're testing whatever DNS server you happen to be using from
just
whatever office you're sitting in or whatever the case, right? And so it only takes one to cause a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the flip side, when you're testing your authoritative DNS, you know, you might have standby servers, other servers, you know, there's still risk there. And so one thing is you should, from a corporate perspective, understand what your DNS egress paths are and where those servers are. You should understand, you know, the basic architecture of, you know, are you actually speaking to that DNS server or, you know, or what firewalls might be in front of them and what issues might be there, you know? So, you know, I mean, I'm a command line scripting software engineer by trade. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would ensure that I was testing against all my potential servers. The other key is just data, you know, and make sure you've got the telemetry from the server. Are you getting more failures than you were getting before? You know, and why? And those are DNS servers are fairly good at spamming you with that data. The question usually is, you know, are people listening or not? And so, you know, oftentimes just with basic telemetry, you can understand if there's issues. So we encourage testing and also, you know, understanding, making sure you're doing wholesome testing. And by the way, it's also a good time to, you know, oftentimes you do find other paths out that you weren't aware were there. But also it's a good time to just sort of assess and ensure that you understand what those paths are. It's a hard thing to do with DNS. Like, what is my path out? You know, from an OS perspective, what your first hop is. Once you got to that first hop, which might be some caching resolving server, where did that thing go to next? And then potentially next, and then it hit the, you know, the external resolver sitting in the DMZ. And then, am I resolving the internet directly, or am I going through like OpenDNS or, you know, my ISP's DNS server? So how many servers does this actually hop when it goes out? And it's remarkably difficult to figure that out, just given how wonderfully distributed and open the DNS protocol is.
Yeah, I think that's probably good. You know, when you think of it's fall here, but you're doing kind of a spring cleaning. Many people have network diagrams, but how many have a diagram of DNS as an application, data flow diagram, you know, for DNS, because it's so fundamental. It's so much the plumbing of the internet. If something happens with that, it's as important as your network diagram. And to reduce your mean time to repair, having that diagram on hand could be critical to reducing the extent of an outage.
Right on. And especially because, you know, I mean, there's this constant thing, right? It's always like, you know, at the end of the day, there's some hard to solve problem. And in our world, it always ends up being DNS. And the time between people can't reach application and understanding that there's some wonky DNS issue because a zone expired because somebody changed a firewall rule and got dropped from some server. So it's only these users, and it still worked for 2 hours, and seemingly some users had access and others didn't because the records were cached. So eventually it's DNS. We actually, we generated one of our hackathons, I don't know, it's probably 3 or 4 years ago. Some of our engineers created a dynamic interactive map of DNS infrastructure from our control plane. Oh, and what was super cool was to visualize the way customers may deploy and configure. One, just to see how many different patterns there were. Do we have, very few primary zones and tons of secondary zones distributed across servers? Do we have, primary zones each on their own servers and then these big servers that have secondaries across all of it? The most amazing thing was the number of interdependencies between the different layers of DNS, because there's server-to-server communication, there's obviously client-to-server communication, there's, and then where's the path out when I'm going out? And so for data geeks and people who enjoy looking at this stuff, especially when it's interactive versus just a sort of static Visio diagram or something, it's super interesting and revealing, because if you can't get that sort of high level view of it, then it just looks like a bunch of configuration on a bunch of servers and, like routing or anything else. It's difficult to visualize.
Yeah. And it's maybe a good time to revisit your entire enterprise DNS strategy and architecture, saying, well, maybe we do want to go ahead and enable V4 and V6 on DNS, knowing that other caching resolvers out there may choose whichever protocol is the fastest or lowest, round trip time. So sometimes it may be IPv4, sometimes it might be IPv6, but we want to give an option to be fast in all cases, because the more we can reduce DNS lookup time, the faster the application gets, the first page of the application gets served.
But it doubles your troubleshooting too, right? Because you got to figure out what path, and it may change along the path too. So it may be that, part of your path is V4 only. So it's going to do name resolution over V4. And then the other part's going to be V6 back to Andrew's point, right? You really don't know how hop by hop, how everything's necessarily going to work out. And maybe it's a V4 problem in terms of what they're accepting. Maybe on the V4 side, they only have UDP, but on the V6 side, they have TCP and UDP setup.
God forbid there's old, Windows 2003 servers out there that only do DNS lookups over V4 transport.
Right. Yeah.
Right. No, and so there's going to be a mix. And then on top of it, a lot of enterprises, certainly in our customer base, I mean, we have some customers that are pushing pretty quickly, and certainly in some parts of the organization, they are, sort of on the private side and on the public side, are, V6 and drive towards V6 everywhere. Others are doing everything possible not to route V6. And sometimes that means even in the external public view of their DNS, and that's even if you're not supporting V6 anywhere within the enterprise, even if the application front end that user is actually going to use isn't available on V6, like you said, there's no reason not to support V6 on your DNS service, because it might be the fastest mechanism, and the internet should prefer the fastest mechanism. But regardless, there's still a lack of V6 adoption. Part of that is RFC 1918 is good enough, and for many, many organizations on the inside, there's enough space there. And in other cases, it's an overwhelming project from an enterprise's standpoint, because, by the way, most of the applications they use internally aren't available on V6. They've got all sorts of nodes, whether they're firewalls or routers or switches or whatever in the organization that don't support V6 or aren't like, so it requires, as you guys both know, a concerted effort. And then you look at the business case and what's driving it. And so, you know, we're seeing more and more, but, you know, I would say for us, it's, 80% of the customers are, you know, not necessarily pushing on any strategy. 18% of the customers are pushing heavily on a dual stack strategy, and maybe 2% of our customers on the enterprise side are pushing heavily towards we're going.
Yeah, but I mean, in the new reality of our COVID pandemic, we've turned the enterprise network inside out, and now there's remote workers, and they're using their 4G devices, they're using their mobile devices, they may be on V6 enabled broadband, they definitely are on V6 capable mobile handsets. Yeah. And so the enterprise network, which is now the internet, the extranet, is V6 enabled.
And they hit their VPN connection.
The VPN connection, which may do no split tunneling for V4, but then the V6 traffic breaks out of the VPN.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for sure there's that side too. Especially with, even if you look at some of the capabilities with the Zero Trust Network Access platforms where, mm-hmm. You're not even connecting into VPN, I'm hoping that there's more momentum and more reason. Maybe that's it. I don't know. To sort of drive more adoption. But again, there's no reason. One of the simplest thing you can do is allow V6 on your DNS server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
To the public facing ones, not the ones, deeper into the enterprise. That's a longer term strategy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's important. I mean, it's funny because early on, I mean, the DNS community didn't have to do a big lift in order to add V6. I mean, a quad A record and a new, in Adder,
right,
domain name, our zone was not a huge change for them in terms of adding V6 support. So I think that was relatively easy, and the compatibility was easy for DNS to do. But maybe you can give us an idea about on previous DNS flag days. So on the first one of really sort of getting there, do you feel like there was actual impact that happened for the backbone of the internet? Do you think there was, was it more of saying like, yes, we know we can change this and it didn't break the internet? Or was it much more about we're trying to actually get behavior changes from people out on the internet? What do you think was the primary goal sort of around that?
So both happened. I mean, I think they separated the, there was, and I should have them in front of me, but they're available on some of the resources you list, and we'll make sure they're there. Sort of the presentations that, both from a slide and actually video perspective from, I don't know, a RIPE conference, something that where they analyzed what actually happened, and there was a great deal of cleanup in front of Flag Day, and then there was a large percentage of continuing non-compliant domains afterwards, and those were separated out into, not does it matter or not, but sort of characterized in terms of what types of servers those were. So they changed behavior, which, that was good. There was I wish I had the number in front of me, but there was a massive cleanup. And a lot of that was, facilitated by that community, which was great.
Right. And it also allows the community to politely, but without having to do too much prejudice, sort of call out the bad actors and say like, hey, we're all here to try and move things forward. And we can demonstrate with actual data now that you're part of the boat anchor that's holding us back.
Right.
And please please go fix your stuff without having to be, dogmatic about it and just simply say, look, you get a choice. You either get to come along and participate and be a full good internet citizen, or we're gonna move on without you.
Right. And the interesting thing with DNS, I don't know if it's specific to DNS, is they can go assess and test ahead of time. So like for Flag Day 2, I think the preliminary measurements were something like under 10%, maybe it was 8% of domains on the on servers don't accept TCP. You know, and they also found that those problems were very concentrated. So like a very small number of operators, you know, were like 70% of that. And then, you know, to get to 90%, you didn't have to have that many more operators. And then there was tons of onesie twosies, you know. So in both cases, they did some preliminary assessments to sort of understand where the problems might be and worked across the community. So I think, you know, I'm sure they've made some mistakes. We all make mistakes with everything, but I think my point is they're trying to be as prepared as possible. And part of that is, you know, the I don't know, nothing too goofy, but sort of the spirit of the internet and those that have created the standards and those that you know, continue to operate in conjunction with commercial vendors that, you know, sometimes have their own interests more at heart and sometimes have a broader, you know, usually their own interests are aligned with broader internet compatibility.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, Scott and I are always interested in sort of, you know, we always compare and contrast around V4 and V6. And so we didn't know, you know, given everything that's going on with sort of the DNS work and sort of, you know, the current dual protocol world that we're sort of living in now, is there anything folks should be watching for that is sort of like, you know, differences or the same behavior across V4 versus V6 with any of the, you know, sort of, you know, DNS efforts that are going on today? Because I always find it fascinating. I mean, there's some fundamental differences around the protocols themselves, and you just need to be aware of what those are. But is there anything specific about DNS's behavior across V4 versus V6 that, you know, maybe we should highlight if you're aware of any?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we so from a Blue Cat standpoint, our, you know, we're in this DDI market, which is an acronym of acronyms, which is, you know, whoever coined it well before my time in this industry, I think was having a laugh. But anyway, it's DNS, DHCP, and IPAM. And so where DHCP is a very different protocol for IPv4 and V6, as you guys are aware. I mean, it's not necessarily, well, it's not even designed to be, it's more than transport. It's not designed to be the same protocol. It's a completely different protocol. You know, then yeah, that's the answer. DNS by and large, and I'm probably forgetting something obvious that somebody's going to point out to me after they listen to this, but you know, there's not necessarily any specific concern, especially around flag days between V4 and V6. And I think the community's done a good job of keeping V6 in their thoughts and design, especially given, you know, the amount of V6 routed now because of the carriers and the mobile operators and, you know, they're seeing tons of it, as opposed to what oftentimes we see from an enterprise perspective on the internet, they're seeing tons of it.
Yeah. So just because someone missed October 1st doesn't mean they can't go and, you know, fix and check and validate. Right. And, but how do people participate in future roadmaps, and what are the next, what's on the horizon here for DNS Flag Day?
Yeah, so I'll point you to the links, but you know, a lot of this is organized through DNS OARC, and there's open meetings with, you know, that people are more than invited to attend and become part of the community. And then also, you know, I mentioned earlier that they maintain a GitHub site that sort of, you know, gives it's not a roadmap view, but here are the other things under consideration as we keep moving forward. And anybody can post a new issue there or comment and try to drive activity around something that's a particular concern, or if they just want to understand. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's always mechanisms to get involved.
Oh, cool. That's really cool. Well, unlike V6, we've run out of space for this podcast. So thanks to today's guest, Andrew Workin, with Blue Cat. So how can the audience follow you on the internet? What's the best way?
Right. So I'm on, one, I have my own podcast, Network Disrupted. And, you know, that's available on Spotify and Apple. My Twitter handle is at @AWorkin. And that's usually the best place to find me. I think that's probably forgetting something, but that's where they can find me.
I'm sure they can look you up on LinkedIn too.
Right, for sure. There's 53 people with the last name Workin in this world, and I'm the only working. So I'm 100% conspicuous.
Fantastic. You can reach the IPv6 Buzz podcast on Twitter at IPv6 Buzz. You can also hit up each one of us on Twitter, Tom at IPv6 Tom. Scott Hoag is at Scott Hoag. And I'm at E. Horley. Thanks so much for listening to the IPv6 Buzz. You can find us on the Packet Pushers or any of your favorite podcast apps. Just search for IPv6 Buzz. If you like the show, please give us a rating on iTunes. You know, we always appreciate that. And, you know, if you like this podcast, we really recommend you check out Heavy Networking, Day 2 Cloud, Network Break, and all the other wonderful, great technical content over at the Packet Pushers at packetpushers.net. So long, and until next time, we'll see you on the internet, the IPv6 internet, that is.
Thanks for listening to IPv6 Buzz, a podcast devoted to truth, justice, and 128 bits of address space. IPv6.